welcome to the show. You know who I am, Tego, and you're watching Expert Talk with Tego. Yeah, you know that's what I'm talking about. And you know I love bringing experts, but not just any expert. I like bringing unique experts that are making unbelievable trailblazing actions all over the world. And today we've got a guy who, he loves motorcycles. I love motorcycles. He knows everything about sailing. We're going to get into that. And he's sassy. What does that mean? Sit right there. We'll be right back. Welcome back, and let's welcome Josh to the show. Hey, Josh, what's happening?
What's going on, Tego? So good to be here.
So good to have you here, man. I mean, you and I had the privilege of being on your show, and I want to thank you again for having me on Fire Builders. I mean,
absolutely.
It was a lot of fun. You are the man, but I want to go back. We're going to get to Fire Builders. Everybody, hold on. We're going to get there, but I want to go back because you've had a very interesting life. You're not the super geek like me that sits in a dark room and just creates stuff. You're that guy. I mean, you are like a captain of a ship or something, right?
That's right. Yeah, it was I did not take a traditional coding software development background, not at all. In fact, I have a Spanish major. I have a bachelor's in Spanish, master's in mechanical engineering. I had, I had maybe a year and a half captaining tall ships, and I worked my way all the way up the chain to get there for years and years. That was an amazing experience, sailing these ships all over the world. Learned a lot about myself, learned a lot about how to deal with other people, how to get along. And then I developed a whole bunch of machinery and things for the entertainment industry. So wow. A lot of stuff that like Cirque du Soleil uses and everything. So it's just been a whole bunch of different crazy things that have led up to all of this software stuff.
Okay, so you kind of skipped past it. You said something about tall ships. Now, I'm from Chicago. A tall ship is something in a tub that a little kid plays with. What is a tall ship versus like a regular sailboat? Like how many people can get on it? What does that mean?
So it's not necessarily size so much as it is the style. So these tall ships are like the pirate ships that you would see in the movies kind of thing, right? Ooh. They're traditionally rigged sailing vessels. They operate the same way they operated back in, the 1800s, so to speak. So that's essentially, these tall ships are absolutely incredible. They're all over the world. They have crews everywhere from like 3 people to 50 people. And I sailed on a number of these things all in my 20s. As soon as I got my Spanish degree, I packed up my bag. I told my parents that I was just gonna be joining this ship. And at the time, they didn't charge you for it at all. You could just volunteer. They said, give us 3 weeks and we will teach you everything that you need to know about sailing. And so I did. And I spent 3 weeks with them and then another 3 weeks and then another 3 weeks. And by the time it was all said and done, I had spent like maybe 3.5 months with this ship. I helped them downrig everything. And then I just jumped off that one onto another one that was headed out the St. Lawrence Seaway. We sailed to Halifax, Bermuda, Bahamas. And that just kicked off my entire career.
Wait a minute, though. You don't look like you're 100 years old. I mean, I thought those kind of ships were around in like 1909. You're trying to tell me those kind of ships are around today?
Yeah, but they're built, they're built as complete. They're not like some people call them reproduction. Some people call them replicas. Like essentially, it's the same exact tooling, It's the same style of build, right? How you manipulate the wood, join it all together. They build these things the same way they built them way back in the day. And they're complete working vessels. And they have all kinds of different purposes. Some of them just represent the goodwill of, say, Maryland or Baltimore. Some of them are all involved in freshwater research, like the Dennis Sullivan up in the Great Lakes. You know, some of them are attached to the state, like the Brig Niagara in Erie, Pennsylvania. Some of them are just like sail training vessels. You know, we would just take kids around the Bahamas and stuff and teach them how to sail for 6 weeks. So there's just all kinds of different reasons for their existence, but they're all around.
And this is something that's still around. We're going through COVID. Everybody knows that we're going through COVID right now. But if, you know, when COVID's over, this is something that if somebody wanted to be able to take a tour or they wanted to maybe work on those ships, you can still do that in 2021.
You can. You definitely
can.
That's
amazing. Yeah. So what made you leave there? I mean, what made you go, okay, I got my sea legs, I'm out, because I'm prior Navy. So I'm just sitting here going, oh my God, this is cool. What made you go, it's time for me to hit the shore and start doing something else?
Man, you hit a plateau after a while. So you kind of get to a point where the only way up is tugboats and container ships and cruise ships and stuff, really big vessels. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You either do that or you go the private route. So you go find a ship that's sailing around the BVIs and hopefully you get a cool owner and you just crew on one of those. Neither of those really, I don't know, was attractive to me. I didn't have the greatest experience with privatized sail, and I definitely didn't want to do like container ships and tugboats. Just wasn't for me. So yeah. I quit it all, and I actually sold a whole bunch of stuff. I moved off the boat that we were living on Key West, and I just flew to India, and from there bought a motorcycle in New Delhi and spent like the next 2 months realigning my life as I rode to Tibet on this bike through the Himalayas. So that like capped off the tall ship experience.
You are like modern day Indiana Jones or something. It's like who gets on a plane and goes to India and says, okay, I'll get a motorcycle and just go for it. What made you decide to pick India? I mean, you could have went anywhere in the world, for one. Why did you pick that? And why motorcycle touring? Other than, of course, motorcycles are cool. I love them.
Well, I'll tell you, India was really attractive because the cost of living was low. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of money at the time. So that was attractive. In fact, the two most expensive things about that entire trip, getting there and all of the shots that you need to get there before you actually arrive. Those are the two most expensive things. Everything else, absolutely 100% affordable and amazing. I just loved India. I really loved it. I liked the lawlessness of it. And, you know, technically you can't as a foreigner like buy a motorcycle there, but there are ways around it. And so you just kind of figure it out. Everything like happens in India. It just all works out. And the reason that I chose the motorcycle was because way back in the day, reading Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance and talking about how these, you know, when you're on a bike, you're a part of the environment. You know, you're not separated from it so much. And
yeah, you are. It is a feeling that I can't explain. I've had my motorcycle license longer than you've been on this planet, since 1983, I think it was, when I got my motorcycle
almost
license.
Longer. I was born
almost longer. You're born in 80?
Yeah.
Okay. So still, you're a baby. 1983. And it's an experience that you just, once you get off of them and you're not on them for a while, you still have that burning desire to get back out there and really enjoy the environment, you know, because you got to be so conscious of everything when you're out there. You can't just drift off that you can in a car, you know.
Oh,
you
got to
be completely conscious of everything, because a rabbit crossing the road could take you out. So I'm sitting here thinking there's got to be people that are watching that are either, you know, they're boomers and they've finished their first career and now they're refiring on their second. And they're going, man, I've always wanted to sail. I've always wanted to get on a motorcycle and just let my hair down and go, you know. And then there's got to be young people that are going, I've been trapped in a building or a house for a year with this COVID stuff. Man, when this is over, I'm going to get me a motorcycle. I might go to India or the Bahamas, or I might go get on a sailboat. What would you tell them? What tips would you tell them for traveling internationally? And what tips would you tell them about, is it still a good thing to do? Get on a motorcycle and go?
It's always a good thing to do, in my opinion.
Mine too.
So I think, honestly, I think people that want to do that now have a harder time, not because their circumstances are harder. It doesn't matter how much you prepare for these trips. Things are still going to go wrong, but that's the fun of it. That's the challenge, right? The fact that it's challenging you in all of these different ways, those are the kinds of experiences that, one, will just stretch in, make you grow. But two, those are the things that you are 100% remember when you come back years and years from now. When you reflect on the trip, you're going to be like, man, you know, I can't believe that happened to me. And then we survived and, you know, that kind of thing. So the reason that I think that it's harder for people is because when I did it, you know, the sailing thing was 2002. 2002 was the very first time that I was on the boat. And the motorcycle thing was 2008. And coming from a tall ship world, I did not embrace technology at all. I barely had a cell phone. I wasn't really using email at all. So the reason I say that is because now that it's so easy to get information, yeah, if you wanted to look up, oh, what do I need to do to ride a motorcycle to Tibet? You can Google it and you'll get all of these opinions about it, most likely from people that
have never done it.
That have never done it, right? Some people will have, listen to them, but the people, it's just harder because you're going to get a whole lot of reasons why you shouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And I just wish that you would push that all aside, just make up your mind and go do it and find out for yourself, because most of those people are dead wrong. So,
Go ahead.
So, that's what I would say. That would be my advice, is that, like, prepare, of course, like, look up what you're going to need. You're going to have to, if you go to India, you're going to have to get a whole bunch of shots, and you're going to have to probably get some anti-malarial pills, and there's a way that things are done, but don't expect to know it all, right? Just go there and experience and live in the moment. And I promise you, things will work out.
You know, you have had a wide variety of life, and I love that. You know, I'm one of those people, when my parents, when I was a child, I listened to them say, if I woulda, coulda, shoulda, you know, and I said, I never want to say that. And I've lived all over the world and stuff because I wanted to just go do it and figure it out. But what is the one thing that you haven't done? What is something that you said, I'm going to do it when I get 50, or maybe when I'm finished with this humongous project, I'm going to take 6 months and just go. Is there something in your wheelhouse that you haven't done yet?
There's a couple of things. I mean, well, honestly, one big thing, at least for me, like one big thing, I've always wanted to learn how to play blues piano.
Okay.
Always. I've just thought that it was the coolest thing ever. And I've never really been able to do it because I've never had a place of my own, like an apartment. I've always been moving around, or I've been living on the boat and stuff. Yeah, you can get a keyboard, but it's just not quite the same. Like, I want the weighted feel. I want to, like, jam on this thing, you know? And that's something that I have yet to be able to actually materialize. It'll happen though, I promise.
That is so cool. Now I have this visual of you with the perfect hat on, you know, not a cigarette, but something hanging from your lip right here. And you're in New Orleans in a club. And
yeah, that's right.
Just, you know, killing it. And we bring in cameras because, like, he did it. You know, I'm going to do it. I'm going to follow you. When you do it, I'm going to follow you.
All right.
You know, you're a very successful entrepreneur. Your business partner, I'm going to call him that, Elvis. We've been hearing him in the background back there. You know, Elvis is so cool. I can't wait, because you promised you were going to work on getting autograph cards. I'm going to hold you to it.
That's right.
I cannot wait to get my autograph card from Elvis the Rooster. You know I'm going to put it right behind me and everybody go, what the heck is that? But you have shifted off to yet another adventure, and now you're sassy. I mean, you're doing, and if people don't know what that means, you're doing software as a service. You're actually building software platforms and information type things, and you're your own show host. You have a thing called Fire Builder. What is that all about? What are you doing now?
Well, so both the show and the software share the same name. Okay. And actually the software came first, and Fire Builders Live, the show that you were on, amazing. We had an amazing time.
Thank you. It was so much fun.
That show was essentially in response to me not being able to travel and not being able to promote the software itself. And so I was like, screw it. You know, I'll just bring people to me. And that's how the whole thing started. And then it just grew with amazing people, amazing guests and referrals and stuff. So the software, I've always loved software. I learned a lot of coding and programming theory and wrote a lot of programs in doing the master's in mechanical engineering. It was in Boston. I actually taught a programming language called MATLAB for like 4 years. So I understood the concepts, but I also knew that software was going to be the way that I wanted to add value to the world and do it on my own terms. I can be like as creative and as like technically proficient as possible. So when I was working as an engineer, I decided to teach myself how to create mobile apps. I created 3 of them. I worked with a developer over in India, some of the developers in the Ukraine. I worked with graphic designers and stuff, pulled it all together for like absolutely nothing. I mean, I really watched how much I spent and did it the right way from the ground up. And I put them out there, and there's just no one cared, you know, like nobody cared at all. And that was really my first like punch in the face to really going all in, creating something and having the realities of the market set in. So for me, I was like, well, you know, something's got to change. And that thing has to be me learning about sales and marketing. And I went real deep into that. I studied, I applied, I experimented. I moved away from the software for a little bit and started helping people with their marketing, like implementing it, because I had this engineering background and it was easier for me to do that. Mm-hmm. And that I was doing copywriting and graphics and all of the technical like implementation of it all for end-to-end users, huge marketing campaigns, big e-commerce stuff. And through all of that, I learned a thing or two about the problems in the marketing industry, the online coaching industry, like all of that. And I just started creating software for my own use. And it worked well enough that other people started using it as well. And now they're subscription products that everybody can use.
Wow. Well, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to find out from Josh how he went from being a captain of a ship to being a captain of his digital industry. So sit right there. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You know where you are, Expert Talking. Guess who I am? Yeah, that's right. I'm Tigo. We're talking to Josh today, and he's talking about sailing, motorcycling through India, and becoming a sassy software developer. So, hey, Josh, let's talk about what exactly is Fire Builder. Where do they find it? Where do they find your show? Let's get into that stuff.
Dig in. Okay, let's do it. So Fire Builders, the software, right? This thing I created. Here's the context. I built this as an MVP for my mom. Like, she was the very first customer. She was the person that I actually built this software for. Before, that's so cool. I was thinking that it was going to be like this big thing and people are going to use it and stuff. I built this for her because I, you know, she needed help. She was an author. She is an author, but she was writing a book and she needed help writing every day. And she leaned on me a little bit to help her break it down and have her like write just a little bit. She was in this just slump. So instead of talking to her on the phone every day, because I needed to work too, I was like, man, maybe there's something that I can create that will give her this intimate feeling of me being there every day and supporting her and motivating her, but at the same time, right, helping her break down her own goals into little simple steps that she can follow and do it for 30 days consistently, right? So that okay. I would create this thing, press play, 30 days later, emerge and see what happened, right? And how she did. Well, she used it for 30 days and 30 days later, she's like, this was the coolest and most amazing thing I've ever experienced. I got so much done. And not only did I get it done, like it helped me kind of break this stuff down into simplistic steps, but the fact that it was from you really made the difference, right? It was from somebody that I wanted their approval almost.
Right.
And that pinged off this idea for me that that is a huge portion of accountability that most apps out there just completely ignore. Right. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to have a to-do app, right? And it'll get some reminders and stuff. It's another to get those reminders as a narrative, as a story from somebody that you respect and that you want to get closer to. So that's how Fire Builder started. And now coaches and consultants use it to scale their personal attention and develop relationships with 10, 100,000 people all at the same time and all with the touch of a button.
So you built a virtual Josh.
I built a whole bunch of virtual, I built a like a cloning machine for Josh. And so then other people started using it, right? They started asking if they could break down their goals, even though they didn't know me. Like Josh had
need to use it.
Yeah, I was like, are they still going to use it? Like, they don't know who I am and stuff, but they did. And then it got to a point where coaches saw what was going on and said, hey, this is a really cool idea, but I don't want the stories to be from Josh. I want them to be from me. I have 100 people in a mastermind. I want to hold them accountable in the same way that you held your mom accountable.
Right.
So it caused me to totally revamp the entire thing. I reimagined it. I created a second MVP, white labelable this time, where it's totally customizable branding wise. And I had paying customers for that. And once you do that, you know, you're on the right track. And then we just built the software from the ground up.
So what's it been like? Cause that's an amazing, accomplishment. You have flipped the coin and getting people to understand that, you know, as a person who has coached people for years and years in production and media, trying to get them past these little red lights and little green light fears that they have, but they're used to being out. Like you were, you know, on ships, you're in other countries, you're, you know, in the free air, riding your motorcycle, and get them to go in and do something like this. I mean, your office literally is outside, but what's that been like to make that shift from being this free spirit outside to being this creative free spirit indoors, quote unquote?
Well, I'll tell you, it's been, I don't think it's been that big of a change for me. I've always been a really balanced person when it came to like the technical stuff and figuring that out. And then mixing that and balancing that with just this like passion to go out and just tackle things and go explore and be more creative. But as far as like bringing in and focusing, it has been the most challenging part for me because, you know, I'm the kind of person that just wants, I want to experience the most potent life I possibly can. And I'm doing that. I just had to find a product, something that I could deliver to the world that was valuable, that also fulfilled me, that also fulfilled my need for validation, that what I was doing was helping, and that gave me this sense of purpose that, you know, that helped me. It ended up being like my why, so to speak. So this FireBuilders software, firebuilders.io, I can see now, right, all of these people being held accountable and breaking down their goals and accomplishing things, small things on a daily basis from all of these coaches that are using it. Mm-hmm. And when I open up the laptop in the morning and I see the readout of, hey, Wanda did this today and Terry did this and John did this as they're shooting for this goal and this goal and this goal, I say to myself, like, here's a bunch of people that are actually pushing towards their dreams with right. something that I've built. And that's incredibly fulfilling for me.
That's gotta be just wild to be able to see that. Now, before we talk about your show, cause we have to, I don't want hate mail. I'm gonna ask the man, give me a minute. You know, before we do that, I gotta ask you, where do they find it? Is it something that somebody, you know, you have to be in a certain like level in their business? They need to have X amount of clients or been a coach for 10 years or something like that. How does that work?
No, there's no prerequisites or anything. I mean, you can use this for a variety of different applications. Most people use it to hold their clients accountable throughout the week mm-hmm. in between Zoom sessions so that they can keep them warm, keep them engaged, right? Keep them purchasing, right? Another really amazing after effect, an artifact of this that didn't really notice until people started using it, are these little daily insights that you get from everybody end up being the best copywriting and marketing material that you could ever, ever ask for. It is like straight up a playbook for how to wow. sell things and what to sell them. So anyway, firebuilders.io, that is the website.
Firebuilders.io. Okay. We're going to make sure it's on the bottom third so people don't call me and say, well, give me a minute. We're going to put it down there. Okay. Give me a minute. So let's talk about FireBuilders Live, man, because that is an awesome show. I was on it. You know, it was awesome before I got there. Hopefully I didn't break it. And now it's even bigger. But tell me all about it. How did you get started? What's that about?
I'll tell you. So how do you feel when you host these things? How many shows do you think you've done?
We're over 120 episodes right about now at this particular moment. Yeah.
Do you feel like you could do this for the rest of your life? Like this is something that you just get really excited about?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like, I can't wait to see where it goes and we can open our studios again and bring people in again and see how we do in front of a live audience. I'm always looking for new platforms, blah, 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 blah. So well, yeah, I totally do.
And I mean the like the interview process too.
Yeah.
Like the way that you're able to sit down with people and just like dig into some cool, right? It's a cool feeling. It really is. It turns out that what I've been doing my entire life, I just didn't realize that it was the exact same skills that I was learning at all of these traumatic events that would happen. Getting shipwrecked over in France, right? We got that trip in India. We got avalanched in to this little Buddhist monastery town called Kaza for 2.5 weeks. Like all of these things that happen to you, you end up developing a conversational skill. And that has helped me big time on the show. Yeah. I feel like if I didn't have any of that and I tried to create a podcast, I'd struggle hardcore. And I did struggle at the very beginning, I do the show, or I did it 6 days a week live at the same time every day with 6 different guests to do that. And I did that consistently since April of last year. And so it's like, it's helped me immerse myself in this world and get good at being a good host and controlling the conversation and letting guests kind of wander off and say something they think is important, but then looping them back to the nucleus yep. of our conversation and actively
reel
listening.
Them back in.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's an art to it. And mm-hmm. And it's helped me get a little bit better at that and great. You know, I'm very grateful that I've just been able to meet so many really interesting people, yourself included. It's just been fantastic.
Oh yeah, you and Elvis are stuck with me now. You guys are family. That's it. You guys are family. That's it. So what's your show about? Who's your guest? You know, let's talk about that.
So Fire Builders Live. I take big ideas, break them down into small steps. So every guest that comes on, we take the whole learning process, whatever it is they teach or they do or they live by example, whatever that is, and we distill it into first principles, which is just a fancy old engineering term for distilling it down into its essence and then focusing on one particular thing. So every guest comes on and we talk about, hey, what's the one thing that you need to know to do X? Or another way that I frame it with some people is, if you wanted to teach an 8-year-old kid that, where would you start? And
oh, I love
that just gives people a singular concept to focus on so they can take that away from the show and actually apply it to their own life. And I've had guests like VH1 hosts, MIT professors, National Geographic documentarians. I had the mayor of Key West on a few months ago, famous singers, songwriters. I had Bruce Springsteen's and Aretha Franklin's bassist, Frank Centeno on.
Wow.
I just like all kinds of really interesting people from all around the world that have something to teach people and are excited about life. And when you hear them, when you see them, you can't help but be infected with their enthusiasm. So that's what I like about it.
So you said you were doing 6 days a week. Are you no longer doing 6 days a week?
Well, I've backed off to human levels now. So I'm doing it.
That's tough.
So almost 200 episodes, 6 days a week. And, wow. And instead it's going to be 2 days a week. And that's going to give me a little bit more time to do some marketing and focus more on the software instead of the show all the time.
And hang out with Elvis. I mean, let's just be honest. You're going to hang out with Elvis.
We're going to hang out anyway. And you know, he's rough, man. Like he's a crazy guy. Sometimes I don't even feel like I can keep up with that rooster.
So now that you've had your experience with building your software and getting all into that, are you planning on doing other type softwares? Are you looking at other projects down the road? I mean, have you got the bug now? I'm a programmer, so I know what that's like. So yeah. Have you got the bug now? You're going, oh yeah, we can automate this, we can do that. Are you going through that right now?
Well, I am. I feel like I'm always going through that. And like I have a very super secret but incredibly promising thing going on in Key West these days. Something new. Never seen it before done. I know people say that all the time, but it's the truth in this case. And I've been doing small scale tests for the last like month or so to try and understand better the user behavior. And once I really get a handle on that, then how to monetize it. Like I know how to monetize it, but like the best way to monetize it. So that's an exciting thing. And that has to do with a bunch of automations and stuff that's pretty hands-off as well. So I got some cool things in the works.
He got some cool things in the works. And then people that are out there are going, well, I'm not techie and I don't know what he's talking about. Yeah, but you use Facebook, man. You go on Instagram. Guess who did all that? All us techie people. Y'all get to enjoy the other side of it. But somebody like Josh has to build it first. Can you imagine if we didn't have Facebook, where we'd be right now, especially during something like COVID? I got a couple of questions. I know I got to get you out of the hot seat because you're a busy, busy guy. But one question I've got is, I know you're down in Florida. Are you still getting out in the water? Are you still, you know, having that time?
Yep. An open invite, by the way, whenever you want to come down. We got, we got boats. We got boats down here. We'll get you out on the water. There's a beautiful sandbar, right? We just beach the boat right there on the sandbar, hang out, drink a couple beers, whatever we want to do out there.
Okay, so the show's over by, no, I'm kidding. And then this is going to sound kind of strange, but I'm going to throw you into the deep end, as they like to say. You know, let's go back, way back, and talk to Josh when he was 10. When you were 10, what did you want to be when you grew up?
all I did was draw Garfield, the cat. That's all I did when I was 10.
I loved Garfield.
Yeah. I got so good at drawing Garfield in any way, shape, or form, like anything. So I was convinced that I was going to be an illustrator, some kind of cartoonist or something like that, which honestly is really...
Technically is what you're doing.
Yeah, it kind of is. I mean, some of the best guys, they tell a story in 3 frames, yeah, right? It takes skill, yeah, to be able to do that. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do, but just in a software sense.
Well, man, you are awesome. You're amazing. You know I'm a super fan. Yeah, I got to have you come back on the show. I want to know what's coming up next. I'm coming to Florida and hitting that sand beach. I'm telling you. You know, I also want to do some fishing, man. I'm a fishing person. I want to thank you for coming on. I want to thank you for hanging out and being a part of our virtual family, because you stuck with me now. You and Elvis.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Yep. Well, Elvis and I are seriously honored, Tigo. This has been great. I really appreciate it. And I love this show. You're doing a fantastic job with it. Seriously, it's impressive. I feel like I learn something from you every time that we see. Elvis agrees. Like, see,
that's my biggest fan.
Yeah, seriously. So thank you again for having me. This has been great.
Thank you for being on. Okay, you guys know how we do this. This is how we do it. We bring experts on. They sit down and share a bit of their story, a little bit of their journey. You know, just enough to wet your beak, as my mother used to say. But this is where you can see how you can grow. So if you're sitting at home going, I want to own my own business, but I don't think it's the right time. Or if you're sitting at home because of everything that's going on in the world, then it wasn't your choice to sit at home. You got the time. Now's the time to get out there and virtually get out, or get out in your neighborhood and start doing something new. Start being an adventure. You need help? Josh just told you about Fire Builders. You know Expert Talk is here. We're gonna do this thing. For now, I'm gonna thank you for coming and watching the show. I'm gonna hope you come back next time and watch it again. And as always, I'm Tigo, and I'll talk to you next time.